You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com. Latin Waves Media is also now available on Twitter at Twitter/Latin Waves Media.
My guest is Maria Paez. She's a sociologist, a Venezuelan-Canadian sociologist, and she's joined me this morning to speak about Venezuela and the ongoing aggression by U.S. policies in the region. Welcome to our show, Maria.
Thank you, Sylvia, for inviting me. I'm very pleased.
Many people are unfamiliar with the transformations that have taken place in Venezuela. But for those in the region, the increased investment by the government of Venezuela in public spending, in education, health, has been a real success. Talk very briefly about the impact this has had on the population in terms of poverty reduction and dealing with the economic crisis that many other countries are facing today.
Well, you have to start with the premise, why is it that Venezuelan people vote for Chavez? Why is it that, astonishingly, this is a man who has been a president for 10 years, 11 years, and each year his popularity actually goes up, and the norm is that the popularity goes down? It is because of the achievements of his government, the achievements of the Bolivarian Revolution. For example, one of the most impressive things is that the government of Venezuela has eliminated illiteracy. Illiteracy means that there is less than 1%, I think, of people who cannot read or write. There's usually a number of people because of their mental capacity and such that don't learn, right? So if a country has an illiteracy rate of that low amount, 1%, it's considered that it eliminated illiteracy. And UNESCO in 2006 verified that Venezuela indeed had eliminated illiteracy. This is an astonishing situation, especially because they did it in less than 2 years. Now, the other thing is the health. 90% of the population, this is from a situation where almost 80% did not have access to health care. Today, about 95% of the people have access to good, free health care system. The poverty in 11 years, this is a decade, used to be 75.5%, and today it's 23%. And the extreme poverty was reduced from 21 to 9%. This is something that has caught the attention of many international organizations who have been trying to eliminate reduce poverty. It means that in a decade, about 15 million Venezuelans have bettered their lives. How did they do this? Well, it wasn't through the trickle-down theory of, you know, giving tax breaks to the rich and it would trickle down. No way. These were important poverty reduction programs. For example, food distribution, food security. This means that there is a whole system now of government-organized supermarkets and markets where the food is distributed. It sounds not important here, but in Venezuela, there were two monopolies of these very, very rich oligarchs who were the owners of all this distribution. And now this monopoly has been broken. So we have the Mercal, which is the distribution of food, food security, which is a whole system of warehouses and silos in which food is maintained there, the increase in agricultural yield, and very importantly, the direct market for farmers, because that eliminates the intermediaries who always push the food prices up. And of course, there is a protection of the basic food basket prices. I know that economists don't like this, but in fact, this works because this means that people are able to buy milk and they're able to buy bread and they're able to buy flour at the prices that are stable. The food in schools, there are in the Bolivarian schools, there are hot breakfast, hot lunch, a nutritious snack before the child goes to the home. Now, what has all this done? You know, poverty is like a hydra, you know, a beast of many heads. So it isn't just give some people a little bit of money here. You have to give education and give health care and provide the food availability and provide jobs. This focus, this multitasking force programs that have attacked poverty in Venezuela. And what are the results? Infant mortality went from 21 to 13,000 babies. This is thousands and thousands of babies that are alive. Maternal mortality went from 57 deaths per 10,000 births to 47. This is, again, an enormous amount of women. The Barrio Adentro public health system started with just primary care. Now it's got secondary, tertiary, and fourth level specialized hospitals all over Venezuela. This has been really very close to my heart when I have gone there to look at the hospitals and the clinics and spoken with the Cuban doctors who were the ones who initiated and helped us establish these clinics. And except for Cuba, Venezuela now has the lowest malnutrition in the region. And of course, there is special attention to pregnant women and children and food subsidies for them. Special attention to children who are orphaned or living on the streets. There used to be thousands of them. And now there's just a little bit of them here and there in different towns. But there are all kinds of programs particularly geared toward children. As to education, well, you know that a people who is illiterate and who does not read is easily dominated. Well, Venezuela has met all the educational millennium goals. In one decade, the school enrollment doubled. This is in a place where the school dropout at some point reached 70%. Venezuela holds the second place after Cuba of the highest enrollment in post-secondary education. That's 83% of that postgraduate education population. And in fact, the amazing thing to me is that because there are all these programs for people who don't know how to read, programs for people who didn't finish primary school, programs for people who didn't finish high school, programs for people who want to go into university, well, it turns out that more than one half of the population of about 27 million is studying one thing or the other. This, to me, is absolutely fantastic. As an educator, I find that the health and the educational achievements of the Bolivarian Revolution are absolutely amazing.
That's an important point to make, primarily because when we look at the kinds of policies that the IMF introduces in the name of austerity measures in a time of economic collapse, for instance, now with the economic crisis, many countries who are seen as vulnerable on the global scale are being asked to not only increase taxes on their population, cut spending on social services like education and health, but also squeeze out the labor force by imposing erosions in salaries and wage cuts. So talk a little bit about what impact this has had from a sociological perspective on the population of Venezuela, and what are the threats they now face as a result of the changes they've made.
The policies of Venezuela have been exactly the opposite of the ones of the IMF and the World Bank. First of all, tax. In Venezuela, practically nobody paid taxes. Now, Venezuela has an absolutely sterling organization for recovering taxes. And now the rich have to pay. Everybody, in fact, has to pay taxes in a country where before nobody did. And the revenue for the government is almost as large as the revenue it gets from selling petroleum from the taxes. So people grumble about this, and yet for the first time, this is a modern tax system that Venezuela has, and it has taxed the rich very, very high, and also the companies. Second of all, the increased investment in education and health, which I just talked about. And the other thing is that the economy, Venezuela has the highest minimum wage in the region. This has been very, very important because the stimulus that the government has given to the economy by giving support to, I should say, small and medium-sized industries and companies, support and encouragement for workers' unions, the nationalization of key industries, the nationalization of banks, massive land distribution with technical and financial support for them. The fact that there are 70,000 cooperatives, cooperatives of fishermen, cooperatives of women, cooperatives of workers, and all organized and led by them, means that this has really stimulated the economy to such an extent that the formal economy grew from about 47% to 55% in 2007, and the informal economy, these are the people who are, you know, on the road just selling you fruits here and there, the informal economy decreased also. The socialist industries are really taking quite a hold. The exports are the same level. It isn't true that Venezuela has an outwardly tremendous dependency on exports. So do Argentina, Mexico, Brazil, Canada, U.S. They all have 30% of exports, the same as Venezuela. And so with the highest reserves in the history of Venezuela, about $34 billion, Venezuela does not have to ask for money to the international banks of any sort. And all of this means that despite the effect that the global economy depression, because we're in a depression even though people don't want to say it, the economy in Venezuela is doing very well. Unemployment is the lowest ever, 6%. You know that's higher than Canada's. It's higher than the United States. The unemployment in the United States is at an astonishing rate. I believe the latest one that I read was, I think it's something like...
Well, in California, it's 14%.
Yeah, in California, but overall, it's about 18%. So the economy is strong. It is vital. It is doing very well. All their problems are not resolved. What they have is a great deal of hope and opportunity, not just hope in the idealistic sense, but of actual opportunities that are there in the country for them.
How has the Venezuelan transitions improved the conditions of others in the region? How has this perhaps provided other opportunities for transformation for other countries in that region?
Well, this is, I guess, a shining light of Latin America. This is why Venezuela is such a threat, because the foreign policy of Venezuela is one respect of the sovereignty of all nations. That means you don't go into another country just because you don't like them. Second of all, to disengage from market dependency on the U.S. And Europe. I mean, the Latin American countries were so divided because everything they needed, from, hairpins to tractors, was bought from the United States or particular European countries. And so Venezuela proved, by disengaging and opening its markets and buying from India and China and all sorts of countries that it never had commerce before, and that was a great example to other countries. The other thing is that Venezuela said, we're not going to ask any more money from international banks, from World Bank and International Monetary Fund. And furthermore, created the Banco del Sur with the other nations, got them together and said, we've got to have our own bank. We cannot continue to be at the mercy of these pirates, because I'm sorry to use the word, but it is true. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have acted like pirates, and so have the International Inter-American Bank and all of these. And so this Banco del Sur is part of the structure that Venezuela has been able to orchestrate along with the other countries, Petrosur, which is the union of all the Latin American national petroleum companies, Petrocaribe, which is Venezuela selling to the very poor nations of the Caribbean petroleum. And what they do is they say to them, you've got 3 months to pay 40% of the price of this petroleum, and 25 years to pay the rest at a very low and stable interest. This has helped the Caribbean immensely. The Mercosur, which Venezuela managed to change, that it wasn't just a commercial, but more a solidarity, not just commercial, but also helping with each other's problems. ALBA is the union of five or six of the countries in which they are helping each other with the needs of their country, exchanging, not using the dollar. but in fact they have a virtual coin, which is called the sucre. And so you get, tractors from one country and cattle from the other. And this is such a shining light. This is such an example which shows the poverty of free trade agreements, which is basically one big country getting advantage for its corporations from the less richer countries.
The important question here is, how has the U.S. responded to this, and what are the threats that Venezuela now faces?
The threats are very large indeed. The United States, having lost its moral and diplomatic and economic leverage in Latin America, because the Latin American countries, leaded by Venezuela, now have UNASUR. UNASUR is the defense of Latin America, which Latin American countries, under the leadership of President Chavez, have said, no, we don't accept it, the Monroe Doctrine. We don't need the United States to defend us. We defend ourselves. And, of course, CALC, which is when they realized what the Organization of American States is, which is a group of colonies there under the whip of the United States and Canada, they created CALC, which is like an Organization of American States, but without the United States and Canada. And they have been, UNASUR and CALC have been working, especially this last year, in diffusing a whole series of very critical crises in Latin America, from Bolivia, from Ecuador, from Colombia, and Venezuela. So how does the United States react, you ask me? By the militarization of Latin America. Based on their Monroe Doctrine, on their doctrine of U.S. manifest destiny, on their fourth-generation warfare, what they did was they took out all the issues, most of the issues relating to Latin America that were in the State Department. And under certain oversight of Congress, they have taken it out of their functions and given it over to the Pentagon, to the Southern Command unit or headquarters that's in Florida. This is very serious. This is very serious because it means that all the issues of Latin America are going to be seen from the point of view of the United States security, national security. In other words, it has been militarized. 14 new military bases in Colombia. In fact, there were 17. What this military pact with Colombia does, it makes Colombia the hub of Pentagon operations in the region. It gives the United States total control over all military bases in Colombia, and it is the largest expansion of U.S. military in Latin American history. In 2008, they activated the Fourth Fleet, that had been mothballed at the end of the Second World War. Now this enormous fleet goes all around Latin America in a show of intimidation, showing, look at our powerful fleet that can actually has the smaller boats that can go in through the rivers of Latin America. They now have bases in Aruba, in Curaçao. They have 20,000 troops occupying Haiti. They have put bases, I think there's more than 10 in Panama. The base is in Honduras. And just this month, Costa Rica was practically taken over. 13,000 U.S. troops have landed in Costa Rica with 46 ships, 200 helicopters, and a submarine. This happened in June in 2010. So you see, this crumbling empire... And I mean it seriously, because with an economy that just cannot, it continues to be bled because of its wars in the Middle East, their infrastructure crumbling, their schools closing in the United States, when they have, I misspoke before, it's 13% of Americans live under the poverty line. And 40 million of people from the United States living on food stamps. This is the most powerful country in the world. They cannot keep this up. So they're desperate right now, because Latin America is considered by them their backyard. Why? Because this is where they have extracted the greatest amount of natural resources and money. during the decade of the 70s and 80s, I think there was something like several trillion dollars that the United States corporations extracted from Latin America at the same time that the real poverty in the region increased tenfold. So you see, it is the place of sacking. We have been colonized. This is the new colonization under the ideology of the free market, of the deregulation, of the give liberty, freedom to the corporation. Indeed, corporations now have the same rights as people. And so all of this destroyed so many of the economies in Latin America that now Latin Americans are saying, you know what, we're not taking this anymore. We're going to defend ourselves with UNASUR. We're going to have our own petroleum infrastructure, because if all the petroleum keeps going to the richer countries, the Latin American countries won't have petroleum for their own development. The other very important thing that UNASUR is doing and is trying to establish is a whole framework in order to protect the natural environment. The natural environment in Latin America has been pillared. It has been destroyed by these rapacious international corporations. Just to give you an example, in Venezuela, in Guyana, there was a hill, quite a large hill, almost a mountain, and it was called the Mountain of Iron. This mountain is reduced now to a stubble. The actual mountain was leveled for all the iron that was extracted there to be sold by corporations in the international market. And, of course, Venezuelans got, you know, jolly little from all of that. So the protection of the environment, the protection of the natural resources, the physical protection of the countries, all of this is a regional integration that has been spearheaded by President Chavez in Venezuela with UNASUR, Mercosur, ALBA, Banco del Sur, Petrosur, Petrocaribe, and of course Telesur, because this integration was in this era of communications, in this era where the United States is unleashing what they call the war of the fourth generation, which is a communications war, a war of a destabilization, a war of disseminating absolutely false information, a propaganda machine that would have garnered the great admiration of Goebbels and Hitler. This is what we see now. And so we in Latin America learned about what was happening in other countries through CNN in Spanish. Well, no more. Telesur is the television station that is the public stations of several of the other countries, and now we learn in Venezuela what's happening directly in Argentina, in Paraguay, in Brazil, and this has been an absolutely phenomenal thing, as well as Radio Sur, which is, again, the radio of the South. All of these things has been spearheaded by Venezuela, and it meant that the regional integration isn't, oh yes, we are sister countries and we should love each other and help each other and all of this idealistic stuff. It was very nice, but it had no basis until there was this structural basis where we're actually going to help each other with our problems. So Venezuela, for example, has helped Bolivia in many ways through the help of also of Cuba, education and health. Cattle coming from one country to Venezuela, and Venezuela passing, you know, gas or petroleum to the others, and not on a mercenary way that they have to pay through dollars. So that is a new way of international solidarity, which did not exist before.
That's beautiful. Tell us, how can people get in touch with Latinas and learn more about the work and what they can do to protect and be in solidarity with the people of Venezuela?
Yes. Well, you can communicate through the Louis Riel Bolivarian Circle. And our email address is the following. Our email address is C as in Charles, B as in Bob, L as in Louis, and then Riel, R-I-E-L, at simpatico.ca. Then the second one I'm going to give you is Latinas. The email number of Latinas, which is the National Council of Latin American and Caribbean Women in Canada, and we call ourselves Latinas, and this is our email address, Latinas, Latinas, @yahoo.com. And you can reach us at either one of these two emails. And we would love to hear from you. We want, especially in the Consejo, the National Council of Latin American Women, we want to hear from women who were born in Latin America, who have a parent from Latin America, or who just love Latin America. We are not exclusive, and we would welcome you. And in the Círculo Bolivariano, the Bolivarian Circle, Louis Riel, named after the great Riel, we would give you any information that you would like on Venezuela.
Thank you again for joining us, Maria. Take care.
Thank you, Sylvia. Bye.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.